And now, it's BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome to today's show. Of course, you know, it's Easter long weekend, and the forecast is great. Mostly sunshine for 3 days, which is fantastic, and possibly up to 15 or 16 degrees. We may be able to have a glass of wine out on the patio late in the afternoon, so that's kind of fun. I guess today what I want to say is if you've left your wine purchasing to the last minute, which I know most of you do, we're going to try and help you out with a few choices here. First of all, wine buying should be something that you enjoy, and it's not so stressful. So we try to do, you know, take all that away from you over at Gismondi on Wine. We're always recommending wines. We always publish the price, and we always tell you where the wine's available, so you can find that wine or search for it, particularly the BCLDB wines, like in BC liquor stores. All you have to do is punch in the name when you're on the site, and it'll tell you what stores the wine are available in, and hopefully you'll find a store that's close to you. Now, for the weekend, here's some quick picks. Umani Ronki, which was on the show, if you listened to them at the Vancouver National Wine Festival, they've got a fun little red wine. It's a very simple little red wine, but it's tasty. It regularly sells for $15. You can get it for $12 this weekend until the end of the month. From Chile, Tesoro, this is a wine, a Sauvignon Blanc that's made in Leda, super fresh. You'd be surprised. You close your eyes and drink this wine, you think you're drinking New Zealand. The difference is it's on sale for $14.99, regularly $17.99. You never find those kind of prices out of New Zealand. Another tasty red wine, high acid. So let's say you're having lamb this weekend. The perfect match, if you don't want to spend a lot of dough, is the Battesiolo Barbera d'Alba from Piedmont, Italy. Regularly $17.99. I can't believe it's that cheap regularly. It's on sale for $14.99. And one of the probably best buys day in and day out from France, from the Rhone Valley, is the Chapoutier, actually from Roussillon. The Chapoutier Bila Haute, that's B-I-L-A-H-A-U-T, Bila Haute, it's $15.99. That's an amazing price considering it sells regularly for $19.99. And in fact, probably should sell for about $24.99. So that's a great deal. Louis Bernard, both the red and white Cote de Rhone, on sale this weekend, $15.99. They also work well. And finally, Dr. Lucin, have some Riesling on the weekend from one of the great Riesling producers of Germany, $15.99. Regularly $17.99. Okay, on the show today, Jamal Christian, restaurant manager of the Hooded Merganser. He joins us to talk about his new menu, new hours, and what's happening in Mid-Valley at the Lakeside Resort and Conference Center, where they are just situated out on the lake. Great place to stop by and have dinner. Carrie Weiss-McNulty, Vice President, Brewing Isle Estate, drops by. Talk about her inn, her wines, and a big award that they've won. Also, we go back to Italy. Mirko Biliorsi, he's the export director of Altozano up in Tuscany. We're going to talk about red wine with him. But up next, Mark Berenger, GM and director of winemaking at Phantom Creek Estates, joins us to talk about where they're at and what their plans are for 2024. They got lots of wine to sell you, and really one of the greatest new restaurants in the South Okanagan. Well, maybe one of the best restaurants in Canada. You'll have to check it out this summer. It's BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and we are set to go.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Penticton, the hub of the South Okanagan. Enjoy mountain adventures and reward yourself after a day on the ski hill with a visit to one of over 80 area wineries, cideries, and distilleries, or our 8 craft breweries. Experience fantastic, locally sourced restaurants, too. It's the perfect destination for a relaxing late winter getaway. Before you go, make sure to check the website for information on wine tours, tasting room hours, and highway conditions. Go to visitpenticton.com.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Attention wine connoisseurs. Iron Gate Auctions are bringing you the chance to indulge in some of the most exquisite back vintage wines from Canada's most exclusive private collections. Each bottle sold individually so you can pick and choose to your heart's content. With an average of 3,000 available per auction, there is something for everyone at all price points. And the best part? Inexpensive temperature-controlled delivery available right to your door. Visit irongateauctions.com to start bidding now.
Now, back to BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome back. Our guest is Mark Barringer. He's the director of wine making at Phantom Creek Estates in the South Okanagan. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
Great to have you here.
Great to be here.
Yeah. You've had an exciting year, exciting couple of years in BC.
Yeah, I just finished my third harvest and almost third complete year.
You wanted to get to a cool climate, and you're in a cool climate.
It goes from cool to hot, you know. We got both ends.
Yeah. Well, a lot of talk right now. People don't really know what's going on in the vineyards. Like, what is the final story? Do you wait for bud break, or how does it roll out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've been able to do some bud dissections and look at what the viability is for the crop this year, and that doesn't look very good.
Yeah.
So now we move to the next step, and is the vine still alive?
Yeah.
So, we'll have to wait and see. We hope to see some green in spring.
Yeah.
And then we'll have to go from there. But other than that, it's a wait-and-see situation.
And if that doesn't happen, people are talking about where are we going to get grapes, what are we going to do, and that's going to be a challenge, I think, for everybody. Huh?
Yeah, I mean, if we don't have any grapes in our region, obviously we're a wine industry, so we have to make wine.
Well, you came out of California. Do you think we should have better ties with Washington, California, Oregon anyways?
I don't see why not. It happens all over in other places. There has to be still that provinciality that we want to protect.
Yeah.
But if we have nothing to protect at the moment, then we have to have an industry that we can work with. So my knowledge of the industry is pretty good, and I know that there's actually a good amount of fruit down there that's available.
Yeah.
We don't want discounted cheap fruit. It's not what I want from parts of Washington, maybe, but I wouldn't mind bringing in some really high-quality fruit from some of the areas of California.
Yeah. Walla Walla Merlot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want discounted stuff and then underprice what we can do in VQA, because obviously our price can be substantially higher. We have a very limited amount here, so we don't want to erode that.
Okay, well, let's talk about, all the wineries are going to be open all year. They got wine to sell at the moment. At Phantom Creek will be no different. And you have a pretty snappy restaurant open, too.
We do. We have a fantastic restaurant. Chef Alessa's doing a great job.
Yeah.
We were voted one of the best new restaurants in Canada, and we were one of the only ones outside of a metropolitan area. So,
like, how hard is it not to eat in there every day?
price sensitivity will do that to you, but it's not your normal burger stand. That's for sure. It's a different level of dining, but I highly recommend everybody take an opportunity to try it.
Great. So you've been now at Phantom Creek for a bit. What is your sort of an assessment of what it is, where it's going, what the ethos is when you came, what it is now? What's the direction at Phantom Creek?
I mean, we kind of started out in a way that we were really focusing in on the Alsatian varieties. Obviously, Olivia Umbrecht's involvement from Alsace, Zinnenbruck fame. And we want to continue with that. We have some other fringe things. We got some Chardonnay. We got some Viognier. And I think there was a little bit of lack of focus maybe in the early days.
Yeah.
Maybe it was what was available on a vineyard that we bought and things like that. But we still, that's our core. And for me, we've talked about this, I think, in the past. Riesling, I think, needs to be a key player in the Okanagan.
Yeah. It sure does with me.
I mean, people are out drinking at 10 to 1 with Pinot Gris.
Yeah.
But I think if you look at the nobility of Riesling and the quality of Riesling that we're capable of, we need to be focused on that. Yeah, you bet.
That's good to hear. And you, well, you planted some stuff in the Similkameen, right?
We did, yeah.
Is that more or less, notwithstanding the current weather, getting close to being ready? Or
We actually have gotten several harvests off there already.
Okay.
They're young vines, of course, and the wines will develop more. We do have a single vineyard offering that we sell at the winery only because we only made a small amount. But, yeah, already the results are fantastic. The wines have excellent viscosity, aroma. Everything is there. And the minerality that comes from the Similkameen.
Yeah. Yeah. You came as undoubtedly an expert in Cabernet Sauvignon.
Mm.
What do you think about Cabernet Sauvignon in BC? And
I think there's extraordinary potential.
Yeah.
Now, the problem is, compared to where I'm from, it's the seasonal consistency, right?
Yeah.
So I think as being a major player in the great ripe vintages, the warmer vintages, we're going to knock it out of the park.
Okay.
But there's going to be some times we're going to have to go, wait a minute, it's a little bit lean, a little bit green.
Yeah.
We either accept it for what it is or we use it as a blending variety. So that's why we kind of focus in on the cuvées and the blended wines and be able to make it be the major player in the vintages that it sings.
Yeah.
And then kind of maybe pull back and use Cabernet Franc or something else during the vintages that it doesn't.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting to hear. Well, I mean, Cabernet Franc, we all of us thought would never fly in the Okanagan back, you know.
Look at it now.
In the 80s or 90s. It just was never going to happen.
Yeah.
But, well, of course, the viticulture is much better, too, so.
Yes.
That helps. Okay, I want to, before we run out of time, we got a couple wines.
Yeah.
Rosé, everybody's making rosé. What's Phantom Creek doing with rosé?
Well,
what are you making it with?
We're making it with purpose. You know, we've had some young vines because of the replants and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to push a young red vine to make a deep, rich red wine with high ripeness too early. So this has given us an opportunity to bring those grapes off the vine early, pick them at a more optimal ripeness for rosé, lower potential alcohol, lower color, and then give it a direct press, whole cluster. So more with intent, more like you would see in Provence or someplace else that focuses on rosé.
Yep.
Whereas a lot of people are maybe making a Saunier, they're bleeding it off and making something to intensify a big, deep red wine, right?
Yeah.
So this gives us an opportunity to make something with some intent.
Yeah. It's quite elegant, actually, but it has a lot of like mid palate weight.
Well, it's
surprisingly
made, the varieties we're dealing with here, of course, are Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, a little bit of Syrah. So, because those are the varieties we work with in the South Okanagan, so you're going to have that intensity that you might not see in, say, you know, something that's made from Pinot Noir or a lighter red variety.
Yeah. You also have quite a nice spectrum of vineyards.
Yes.
That you work with. How is that working out, and how does that come into play at Phantom Creek?
Well, we like to focus in on the individual vineyards at our top level.
Yeah.
We do distinctive wines from those vineyards because we have Golden Mile with Kobo. We have the Becker Vineyard in the Black Sage Bench, and of course the famous Phantom Creek Vineyard. But then we jump the hill to the Similkameen, and we have the Evernden Vineyard. So we have very unique terroirs in each spot. We like to let them really shine within the labeling that we do. And then as we move down through our tiering, we have blended wines from the various properties to make more maybe a combination.
You know, I mean, a lot of people say, well, we want to let the vineyard shine. But, like, how do you do that? Like, what's the important? What needs to be done to let the vineyard speak?
I mean, obviously, if you look at my background working with various wineries in Napa, we always had vineyard-designated wines as well.
Yeah.
So for me, it was always about, what does this vineyard bring?
Yeah.
What is it, if I had to sit down and you asked me, okay, what does this vineyard bring to...
Yeah, what does Kobo bring to...
Right, okay, so Kobo is a good example. It brings kind of an old-worldly type of style.
Yeah.
It has a little bit of shading in the afternoon compared to the other side of the valley.
Yeah.
It retains a little bit more natural acidity. So we see more of a leaner tannin, a little bit more... it could be gravelly at times, so that has to be managed.
Wait, that's a more Euro style.
Exactly, and that's kind of the comparison I make. If you look at the west side of our valley, we're making more of an old world style. But if you shift over, you're getting a new world style.
Yeah, and the west side is Becker.
That'd be east side would Becker.
Sorry.
Gold Mile would be the west side. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's the difference between Becker and Kobo.
Yeah, because Mount Kobo is what we named the vineyard after. It's a very imposing figure.
Yeah.
And it gives us about 3 hours of extra shading in the afternoon when you have 16-hour days.
It,
right.
Yeah.
It makes a difference.
But it's still shining on the other side
and
of the valley.
And it's directly shining on the vineyard at Becker, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's talk about, we have a wine from Kobo, I believe, or is it?
Actually, we have our Cabernet Franc. This is blended from the variety of vineyards.
Okay.
So we have Cabernet Franc at Becker, Kobo, and Phantom Creek.
Okay.
And we did plant some at Evernin, but we don't have that yet in this form, right? It goes actually into the rosé we had. But it allows us an opportunity to blend the Cabernet Franc from all the sites and get all those layers. So you get the Kobo, which gives us kind of that backbone.
The freshness, yeah.
And then you have the stuff from Becker on the other side that gives us a little more of that ripeness, the heat that kind of cooks out that kind of characteristic.
Yeah.
And gives us kind of a lot more layers of complexity.
Yeah. Okay, I just want to have a quick sip.
Mm-hmm.
Not great radio, but great tasting.
That's right. We're enjoying it. I hope you are.
Yeah. And just for, because I'm into, because people will know that you know Cabernet Sauvignon. So how do you position Cabernet Franc versus Cabernet Sauvignon? What would you tell the consumer if they're standing in front of these bottles? What's the difference?
Well, I think I have to shift my perception a little bit from my past, because I always thought of Cabernet Franc as being more of a secondary player, a blender.
Yeah.
Something that was in a supporting role within a blend.
Yeah.
And even within a varietally labeled Cabernet to bring a little bit of nuance.
Yeah.
But here, we have the unique opportunity to actually make pure Cabernet Franc that's expressive.
Mm-hmm.
It's not overly green or has, obscure kind of weedy type of components to it that you see in a lot of places.
No.
We actually had the ability to ripen it quite well.
And it's not Loire.
No, not at all. It has a richness to it that's very unique. And it does have a cold hardiness to it that helps.
Yeah. And the tannins? Slightly softer or not than Cab Sauv?
In the right spot, yeah, absolutely. It can soften up nicely because it does ripen earlier.
Yeah.
So we do get the greenness, the pyrazines to cook out a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
So if you have a short season, because it can be quite abrupt, obviously, in our area, things can be all well and good and you have a great summer and then all of a sudden one day it's snowing. So if you can get your Cabernet Franc in the door maybe a couple weeks earlier and the Cabernet's still out there, there's some risk to that.
Right
on.
Okay, before we run out of time, so what about the hospitality, the visiting, the club? Like, what should people do if they want to get involved with Phantom Creek?
Yeah, I mean, we're getting ready to roll for the season here. We're opening up our doors to tours and tastings. We have been since about Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
And the restaurant's going to get to 7 days a week here really soon for at least lunch and then hopefully dinner. And we'll, our wine club has a fantastic opportunity. We have a lot of unique wines that you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
Especially the Alsatian style wines that we work with Olivier.
Yeah.
16 month Foudre aged Rieslings.
Wow.
I mean, these things are unctuous, beautiful wines with no residual sugar, but you would swear they did.
Yeah.
And then, of course, our small lot wines from our red vineyards are also over the top aging wines. The Phantom Creek wines, unbelievable.
Yeah.
But you can only get them if you're part of our club or come to visit us. So we encourage people to visit. It's an amazing property if you haven't visited it.
It's fantastic property.
It's unrivaled in the area in the South Okanagan.
Including the art. There's so many things to do there
just
to absorb as well as tasting wine.
You bet.
And eating like world-class food.
Yeah.
Really.
No, our restaurant, there's no comparison in the South Okanagan.
Yeah,
no way.
So great.
Yeah.
Mark, thanks so much for joining us.
Great
to see you.
Oh, it's so great to see you, too.
I hope things turn around and warm up a bit.
Me too.
But, it's farming. I think, did you have an awful year in Napa ever? Fire seasons aren't so good, I guess. Yeah, but never got frozen out too much.
Not in this way. I mean, not that that's happened here either. I mean, this is a unique situation we're trying to deal with. We have to adjust, and we adapt.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Mark Barringer, Director of Winemaking at Phantom Creek Estates. This is BC Food and Wine Radio. I'm Anthony Gismondi. We'll be right back.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Your next corporate event or retreat deserves the best. The Watermark Beach Resort. With conference spaces to host large or small gatherings, they can create your perfect event or gathering. Enjoy the culinary excellence of 15 Park Bistro, open daily for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Make sure to follow them on Instagram and Facebook at 15 Park Bistro for the latest updates on their brand new dinner series. To make a reservation or learn more about events at Watermark, just go to watermarkbeachresort.com.
Hi, this is Paige Schultz, marketing manager at Visit Penticton. Did you know that Penticton was named the craft beer capital of Canada? Joining me in studio is Kim Lawton, marketing director for Cannery Brewing and the Penticton Beer Blocks, Penticton's craft beer collective. Kim, what brings craft beer lovers to Penticton?
We have an amazing craft beer scene here in Penticton with unique family-run craft breweries, including some of BC's oldest, plus some of the newest craft breweries as well. All of our breweries are family-friendly, and each one offers something special, like great food, live music, and lots of other fun activities all year long.
And when is the best time to visit our craft breweries?
Any time of year. After a day of hiking, biking, skiing, or hanging at the beach, our craft breweries are the perfect place to unwind and soak up the sun on our beautiful patios.
Amazing. Thanks, Kim. For information on all our breweries, events, and activities in Penticton, go to visitpenticton.com.
Now, back to BC Food and Wine Radio. Here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. Welcome back to the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest is Mirko Biliorsi. He's the export director for Altiseno. We're talking Brunello di Montalcino, one of the best. Welcome to the show. Great to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you.
You enjoying Vancouver?
Yeah, I enjoy.
Yeah. We enjoy your wine.
Thank you very much for enjoying our wine.
Yeah. Well, I know the Americans claim that they like Brunello best first, but we think we're in the game too here in BC because we drink a lot of Brunello.
That's great.
What can you tell us? So let's talk about the history at Altiseno. Let's talk about the property for a second.
So Altiseno was one of the historical producer of Brunello di Montalcino. Was born in founded in 1970 and start to produce Brunello in 72.
72, so that, not that old. Some people
not that old, but you know, Anthony,
the place is old.
Yeah, the place is old, but I mean, the history of Brunello is quite recent, except, you know, for the founder, for Biondi Santi, for the father.
Yeah.
But, when Biondi Santi start to plant Sangiovese in Montalcino, almost no one follow him. So no. I mean, and that was the period, end of 60s, beginning of 70s, when some producer they start to believe in this, and they start to plan to follow him, and Altiseno was like for certain aspect was like a pioneer because the founder of Altiseno was an entrepreneur from Milano, and he had another kind.
Those city people.
Yeah, exactly. With open mind. So we are talking about 70, and it was quite a long time ago.
Sure.
If we think about Italian wines,
And what we know about Italian wines today is that it's a farming culture. It's a mixed farming culture. It's olives. It's everything in one spot. So it's not an easy place to understand or even travel through. Because there's a lot going on.
Yeah, right. In fact, I'm from Montalcino. So when I'm talk about the area, I still remember the idea of this historical producer. So most of them they were countrysiders.
Yeah.
And the rest were noble family.
Yeah.
And
there's a big difference.
Exactly. No, there is
big
a big
culture.
Difference.
Yeah.
But then this guy who founded Altiseno was an open mind guy, and he brought the idea. Was not the only one for sure, but he brought the idea of really investing in quality.
Yeah,
and that was a big
That's
point.
A good start.
Exactly. So, it was one of the first in trying a different kind of oak size.
Yeah,
and he was the first in research in terroir. So Altesino was the first in producing
to look into that.
On that. Yeah. And that is a great history. Then the history become more recent with acquisition of Altesino of Elisabetta Agnuti Angelini. So I mean, and now is a lady who run the Altesino property, the property. And follow the same concept.
Well.
Exactly.
Mirko Biliorsi, he's the export director for Altesino. We're talking about, let's just get a couple things out of the way. So Brunello di Montalcino, we talked about Sangiovese.
Yeah.
It's all Sangiovese. Actually, it's a certain kind of Sangiovese.
Yeah.
And then there's, what are the levels? Because there's several levels of Brunello, right? So now there's a Rosso di Montalcino, the young sort of wine, before you get to Brunello. Well, you can take us through it. What are the differences sort of now when people can buy?
I mean, talking about Sangiovese, Rosso di Montalcino, Brunello, so let's say about Altesino. Rosso di Montalcino is for sure a Sangiovese. These are two appellations which are 100% Sangiovese. Yep. Are the two only appellations in Italy which are 100% by law Sangiovese. And let's say the concept for Altesino of Rosso di Montalcino is to have a great Sangiovese, but much more focus in a fruitness, still very elegant. Yeah. Very fresh, very balanced, something that is for drinking in few years after the harvest.
More approachable. Yeah.
And let's say that is the concept of Altesino, Rosso di Montalcino, because you can find different kind of Rosso di Montalcino style.
So,
but that is what we do. And then the step up for sure is the Brunello di Montalcino, where we have different kind of, we produce the classical Brunello di Montalcino Altesino Vintage, we produce the single Vigna Montosoli, and then we produce the Riserva. So, So
they're all different wines, same place. They're all connected.
Yeah, they are all connected. It just, let's say, different step up or different step aside. Because for sure from the Brunello di Montalcino Vintage from Altesino, the concept is to produce a Brunello di Montalcino, so a great Sangiovese with complexity, with freshness, but very well balanced, quite approachable. So it's something that can last, can evolve, but not like the next step, which is the Brunello di Montalcino Montosoli, or which is the Brunello di Montalcino Riserva. Mm. So,
well, we're tasting that. I just tasted Rosso. This is a lovely wine. We had the 2022 Rosso, so you can actually drink it now.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And you probably drink it the next 5 to 7 years.
Exactly.
Will be fine. It'll probably be even better after, but for now, that's the position. Yeah. But beside it, we're tasting the 2017 Montosoli, and there's like no competition. It is the same family, but it's a completely different wine.
Yeah, you're right, Anthony. You're right. That is the little brother.
It's not to compare.
We always say, no, the little Brunello, the little brother.
Yeah.
But it is not perfectly correct. Because when we talk about Rosso di Montalcino like this, normally it's something that comes even from part of parts or of vineyards which are normally even younger vines. Mm-hmm. So I mean, you have much more vigor in the wine, much more fruitiness. When we get older, and that's the case of Brunello di Montalcino Montosoli, so the vines there are probably around 15, 20 years old.
Yeah.
And so you get much more complexity, much more elegance, much more finesse. So are two completely different level of wine.
It's hard to imagine when you have a wine like Montosoli, or you know, when you have a great Brunello, it's hard to believe that it's just made from grapes when you think about it. Because it's just so complex and so interesting and so not grapes.
I mean, you're right.
It's more about the place, I guess, at that point.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's something like about life. I mean, that is a spectacular place. I was saying, you know, the Altesino was first producer in researching in terroir, and was the first actually in producing a single vineyard. So Montosoli was the first single vineyard of Brunello di Montalcino in 1972.
Let's say that's a long time ago for us.
That is a particular vineyard, the north side of Montalcino, 5 hectares, clay shale soil, galestro soil. It's north exposure, and it's you never know. I mean, it's nature. It's about nature.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back, we can talk about many things of this place. However, in terms of what the result is, we cannot explain why, for sure. We were talking about complexity. That is a wine that goes from flower tasting, berries, spiciness, balsamic note.
So earthy notes.
Electric notes. So it's something which is just fantastic, spectacular.
But it's interesting, though, because now with global warming, to be in the north facing is a huge blessing and something that people would like to have.
To have.
With old vines on the north side, this is fantastic.
In fact, that was the point. I mean, if we go back to the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, and if we look at the result in this period in Montalcino area, we saw that south part, low vineyards, they were the vineyard that could give us much more consistency in having a wonderfully matured Sangiovese. North area was much more complicated. You could have two, three vintages. Excellent.
I would say the South was helping you in New York, but the North was still was helping you in Belgium. You know, that sort of thing.
You're right. Yeah. You're right, Anthony. That is the perfect.
I love it.
Yeah.
We're tasting 2017. Of course, vintage is still important.
Yeah.
And you've had a good run of vintages. How would you talk about 2017?
Because
we don't have much time. So let's talk about
17 was however a very good vintage. For sure, but was very hot and dry. So I mean, when you drink now this wine, you understand that you need a little in order to have a nicer balance in the wine. For sure, I mean, if we are talking about matching with food, pairing with food, is a different way. But itself need a little longer in the bottle. You have an extremely complexity. However, the wine is still and. Because we are in the north side, so we can support very well. Even the hot season, you still have a nice freshness. You have a little bit evolved aromas respect to some other vintages. But the wine is a great wine, a fantastic wine.
It's delicious.
And then it's about nature. So, I mean, when it's about nature, we love even different kind of vintage because nature cannot be every year the same, and so the result cannot be the same, and so we need to upset what is the differences exactly. So I mean,
Mirko, thanks so much for joining us today. I can only say to my listeners, like, get on a plane, go to Tuscany, visit Brunello. As soon as you get there, you'll understand it. And visit Altesano.
It's
a great place to
visit. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Anthony, for the interview.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, hope to see you many people there.
Mirko Biliorsi, he's the export director at Altesano. You're listening to the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. I'm Anthony Gismondi.
Thank you.
There's more to come. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Your favorite wines delivered right to your door. It's easy when you become a Liber Estates Rebel. Rebel Wine Club members enjoy regular shipments of Liber wines for your cellar, along with complimentary tastings, VIP treatment at the winery, and more. And with easy and convenient online ordering, your wine will be at your door before you know it. Discover more at LiberEstates.com. Simply great wine.
Penticton, a year-round mecca of adventure and wine. Get to know Penticton at the 7th Annual True Penticton Tourism Expo, Sunday, April 7th from 10 till 3 at the Penticton Trade and Convention Center. Learn more about all the fantastic things to see, do, and explore, and the places to play and stay in Penticton. Sample great local wine, spirits, and craft beer with a chance to win some fantastic prizes. Admission is free to this family-friendly event. Go to visitpenticton.com for more upcoming festivals and events in Penticton.
It's BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. I'm pretty excited to talk to our next guest, Carrie Weiss-McNulty. She's the vice president of Brewing Owl Estate Winery. If you haven't heard, Brewing Owl was recently awarded the Canadian Wine Industry's Award of Distinction for many years of work. Now, this award, hosted by the Wine Growers of Canada and Wine Growers BC, is said to be the highest form of peer recognition in the Canadian wine industry. Nothing like being recognized by your peers, Carrie. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Anthony.
You must be excited about that.
We were so surprised, for sure. So surprised and so honored to be the recipient of the award this year. That was definitely the initial reaction, was just complete surprise. And we were honored, humbled to be recognized by our peers, and just really, really proud to win the award as a family, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, often I talk to people, I would say mostly in Europe, who've won these kind of awards. Their family has won these awards over the decades and years, but you've actually lived through them, you know, earning this award as
Absolutely.
Well as you at the end. So that's got to be really special.
Yeah, I think, and exactly, I'm really so happy for my parents to receive this recognition. You've met my parents before. They're the most sort of humble and authentic, down-to-earth people. And I always tease them that they're not very good at self-promotion, shameless self-promotion, I call it. So I really love that they've received this recognition from their peers in the industry. I think that's just such an honor. And I was really, really happy for them to be recognized at this stage of their participation in the industry and at this stage in their careers. It was exciting.
So great. Of course, we're talking about Jim and Midge, your parents. Let's talk, maybe some people, there might still be some people who don't know where Brewing Owl is, how it got started. Maybe give us a real quick history lesson.
Sure. Okay. So Jim and Midge, my parents, founded the vineyard company actually 30 years ago. In 1993, when my dad purchased the first 100 acres on the Black Sage Bench, started growing wine grapes, and really decided from day one that he would focus on quality as a grape grower. From there, they built the winery in 1997. It was ready for the 1998 harvest. And over the years following that, we have reinvested back into the business and have grown the business in various stages and phases, with additional construction to expand the cellar for more wine production, but also to build the on-site restaurant, the on-site guest house, and sort of building on the agritourism side of things as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we are Yeah, 30 years later. And the final sort of stage that we've seen recently in 2021 was our acquisition of Wild Goose Winery in Okanagan Falls.
Yeah.
That was a great buy. Yeah, it's been really wonderful. So over the years, you know, starting with my parents, my brothers and I over the years have both been on board. My one brother, Steve, early on as in the winemaking capacity. And today, my brother, Chris, and I are overseeing the day-to-day operations. Chris oversees the vineyards and the cellar production and our wine production. And then I focus more on our hospitality and on-site services here at the winery.
Yeah. And shameless promotion.
That's right. That's my job.
I love
job.
That. Well, you didn't touch on it, but of course, the winery's called Burrowing Owl. You've raised now over $1 million towards rebuilding the Burrowing Owl population. That's another great feather in your parents' cap to get involved in that. I think that's been such a great success. And maybe mention a little bit about being green as well. You've done a lot of work in that neighborhood.
Absolutely. And I'm proud to announce, actually, we are nearly at the $2 million mark.
Oh, wow.
For the Burrowing Owl Conservation Society. And that, again, it really stems back to my parents, what I call just genuine and authentic commitment to environmental initiatives, conservation causes, and wildlife management. So their desire, you know, even the name of our winery, Burrowing Owl Estate Winery, I like to tell the story that it wasn't chosen as a marketing tool. It wasn't chosen because it did well in focus groups. It was just a genuine desire to raise awareness of the burrowing owl. And I think my parents approach all of our, and now my brother and I approach all of our conservation and sustainability initiatives in the same way. So you're right, we charge $5 still to this day in our tasting room, and that has over the years now grown to be over $2 million that we have given to both the Burrowing Owl Conservation Society, SORCO, which is a society for the rehabilitation of raptors, and also other conservation organizations like the Land Conservancy and the Nature's Trust, which my dad served on the board for a number of years. But yeah, in addition to that, there are many other, I think our approach to sustainability is to really ensure that we're implementing initiatives across the entire organization. It's not something that we just focus on, say, in the vineyard with our vineyard and growing techniques, but it truly is integrated across the company. We have significant solar installations producing 240,000 kilowatt hours of electricity each year, which could power about 25 to 26 Canadian homes every year. We're offsetting our carbon footprint by 120 tons per year, as well as, you know, more simple things like we have a significant composting program and things like integrated pest management, where you let some of the foliage and grasses and things grow between your rows to attract some pests or some insects that will eat the pests that we don't want out there. So lots of different ways that we implement those things.
Yeah, I can see why you won such a great award. Our guest is Carrie Weiss McNulty. She's the vice president of Burrowing Owl Estate Winery. Lots of talk this year about trouble in the vineyards, but let's talk about what's going to happen this year in the Okanagan, because you're going to be open all year and you've got lots of wine. Can I get a room in that guest house, or what's happening? Are you full? Give us an update.
Yep. You know what? We are full. It's I know there's a lot of confusion out there. I was recently at the Vancouver Wine Festival, and I think that people were feeling that because we might be struggling in the vineyards that there may not be wine this year. And so I can definitely say from our perspective, and I know lots of the other Okanagan wineries, is that we welcome our guests back with open arms again this year. We're getting ready to open up this weekend. We had a great crop in 2022, a bumper crop in 2022, and we're just starting, because we focus mostly on reds, we're just starting to get some of those fabulous wines in bottle, and we're expecting to have a great selection of wine on our shelves this summer. Our restaurant, we're fully staffed and trained up and ready to go. Our guest house, I will say, is largely booked up for the summer, but we do still have room sort of in the earlier part of the summer, May, and then again in October. Yep. So, we're looking forward to a great summer. I think there's going to be a lot going on up here.
Yeah, the restaurant is open. Is it Thursday to Monday in April and then fully open after that? Or
you got it. Yep. So, that's right, 5 days through April and then 7 days a week as of May 1st right through till Thanksgiving.
Yeah. What about tasting? Have you evolved from the pandemic? Like, is it reservations, walk-in? What's happening there?
You know, we encourage reservations. It definitely helps us to plan for our staffing and plan for our operations, but we do everything we can to take the walk-ins that show up. So we encourage people to make reservations, but if you didn't get to it, give us a try, and if we can squeeze you in, we definitely will.
Okay. Well, we're almost out of time, but I wanted to talk about Easter, maybe a couple of wines for Easter, and so maybe so what's coming up in terms of releases at Brewing Owl.
Sure. Okay. So for Easter weekend, in our house, in the Wise family, we just have a huge turkey dinner every Easter, and the whole family gets together, the nieces, the nephews, the cousins, and my mother, who is Midge, who is the one of the founders, absolutely loves Chardonnay. That is her wine, and it's a beautiful Easter wine. And so on our table this weekend, we will have the 20 or the 21 Chardonnay. The 21 is currently available on our website. And for my father, he likes something more on the red side. So for him, with our turkey dinner, we will have the option of a Pinot Noir. So our 22 nice. Pinot Noir will be on the table for Dad and the 21 Chard for Mom. And then we'll hopefully everybody will be happy.
Mm-hmm. And the 22 white wine releases, what will be up first? Will it be the Pinot Gris or what's available?
Yeah, you bet. So we kick off our wine releases every year with our new Pinot Gris release. It's typically in April. We're actually just bottling it this week. It's tasting fantastic. So the 2023 release of our Pinot Gris will be later in April or possibly early May this year. We haven't quite selected the date, but I always encourage people to sign up for our newsletters and you will be first to know when it is ready to go.
Carrie, great to catch up with you. Congratulations again. Please say hello to the parents on getting such a wonderful award for all the work they've done in the South Okanagan and across the Canadian wine scene. Always good to catch up with you and hope we can see you soon in the Valley.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Anthony.
You're so welcome. That was Carrie Weiss-McNulty. She's the vice president of Brewing Owl Winery. Up next, Jamal Christian. He's a restaurant manager at the Hooded Merganser on the lake at Penticton Lakeside Resort and Convention Center. This is BC Food and Wine Radio.
There's lots more still ahead. This is the BC Food and Wine Radio Network.
Diora, the culmination of a more than 30-year vineyard-to-bottle journey in the Santa Lucia Highlands and the family-owned San Bernabe Estate in Monterey, California. Diora's fruit from their vineyard flourishes in the radiant Monterey midday sun, while refreshing breezes coax the complex flavors found in every drop. Diora, indulgence begins in the vineyard, now available at select liquor stores across BC. Find out more at diorawines.com.
Most people have a casual connection with wine, as in they like to drink it. We think it's essential to read the label and whenever possible to connect with the people who make the wine. They energize you, and unlike many businesses, they'll answer most all of your questions about where the wine comes from and how it's made. Then the next time you pour a glass of wine, you'll realize it's more than just something you like to drink. I'm Anthony Gismondi, and wherever you are in your wine journey, we'll meet you at GismondiOnWine.com.
Escape to Tin Horn Creek Vineyards on the captivating Golden Mile Bench in the heart of Oliver's Wine Country. Their wine shop awaits you Thursdays through Sundays from 11:30 to 4:30. Embrace the season with their Blanc de Blanc Sparkling, adding a lively note to your winter wanderings. Explore the wonders of the South Okanagan, where nature's beauty meets the art of winemaking. Plan your visit at tinhorn.com. Ready to welcome you.
This is BC Food and Wine Radio. Now, here's Anthony Gismondi.
Hello, British Columbia. We're back with a special shout out to Vernon and all 25 other cities across the province on the BC Food and Wine Radio Network. Our guest is Jamal Christian. He's the restaurant manager at the Hooded McGanser on right on the lake at the Penticton Lakeside Resort and Conference Center, which is our home away from home when we're in the, let's say, the mid-valley of the mid-Okanagan Valley when we're doing shows up there. Jamal, how are you today?
Hey. Hey,
great to have you. Yeah, it's good to have you on the show. We haven't talked before, but we are veteran diners of the Merganser, me for far too many years. But I love the place. Why don't you explain to people where it is and because it's such a great setting.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that. Thank you. So we are located just on Lake Okanagan down in Penticton, right behind the Penticton Lakeside Resort. And when I say on the lake, we are built up on stilts directly over the water, so it is as close to the lake as you can get. It's more than lakeside dining. It's dining on the lake.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. Many times I've sat outside, the wind comes up and a storm blows up the lake, and you can see it all happening. Sometimes you got to get inside. Other times you can just wait it out. But it's a great place for a wine person to maybe understand a little bit about the terroir of the region, because there's so much going on there with the lake and the bluffs and the mountains and the way that they all come together to affect how things grow in the valley. So it's an interesting spot, and I really enjoy sitting outside there. I wanted to talk to you today about a few things. First, we'll just get it out of the way. Are you fully open yet, or how will your hours go from now through until Thanksgiving?
Oh yeah, well, we are fully open 7 days a week. Our current hours, we open at 12 noon till 10 p.m. during the week, and then weekends it's 12 noon till 11 p.m. In the next month or so, just weather dependent, of course, when we open the patio fully up, we're going to extend our hours. We're looking at very likely something like 11 in the morning till midnight every day.
Yeah, and one of the things I tell people now is when they book their hotel rooms or their wherever they're staying in the Okanagan, it's pretty wise to actually try and book a dinner reservation, because it's almost impossible to walk up to a restaurant between 6 and 7:30 and get a seat now. Is that the case at the Merganser?
In peak season, it can definitely go that way. We do like to give priority reservations and bookings to people who are staying at our resort, and those are things you can do when you call to book with the Penticton Lakeside Resort. You can actually request a reservation at our restaurant, because we are part of the
right
family.
That's a good idea. Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit. How would you describe the restaurant in terms of the food or what people can get when they go to that restaurant? Is there a theme or something that you could help us out with?
So we're actually working on a brand new menu and a big refresh that's coming mid-April. We're going to be focusing a lot more on seafood selections, just things that are local to British Columbia. We're going to be bringing fresh oysters on. There's a lot of fresh, light ingredients for the summer that you can find from lakes and the ocean in British Columbia.
Yeah. Okay, our guest is Jamal Christian. He's the restaurant manager at the Hooded Merganser at the Penticton Lakeside Resort and Conference Center, just out the back, actually sitting on the lake, just above the lake, at the edge of the lake, with some fantastic views. Jamal, you have something special. You guys have your own farm. Let's talk a bit about that.
We do indeed. It's called Valley View Farms. It's also located here in Penticton. Every year we plant a couple new crops based on what we're hoping to do with the next upcoming season. So coming into the summer this year, we have like a fresh green jalapeno relish that we grew last year that we're going to be putting on a bison burger we'll be featuring this summer. Charred serrano salsas that we canned last year. Garlic is beginning to pop up out of the ground, and we have early lettuces coming in soon with winter carrots right behind. So we do have about, I believe it's 20-25 acres, and we grow a lot of fresh produce that we use directly here at the Lakeside Resort and in the Hooded Merganser.
Yeah, that makes a big difference when you have control over your own sort of local greens and brings so much freshness into the restaurant. I like that.
It definitely is farm to table incarnate.
Yeah. So burgers. What else stands out on the menu for you?
I mean, I've spent most of my life as an outdoorsman and doing hunting trips and things like that. So a bison burger is going to be the biggest feature this summer, in my opinion. I love that. We are also going to be bringing fresh BC oysters in. Yeah. Bringing back the buck a shuck, so to speak. Of course, not with today's economy, but we will be doing freshly shucked oysters for our tables here. We don't see that too often up in the valley, so we're very.
No, that's great. And you also have quite a smattering of Asian dishes as well, which I like because I think they match up well with the local wines. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, we're working on a new menu, so some of the ones we have won't exactly be the same or translate over, but we are working on a new ramen bowl, which I'm very excited about. Growing up in Vancouver, I loved ramen as a kid, so getting some good ramen out here in Penticton will be fantastic. We're going to offer a vegetarian option, very likely with a fried tofu, and then a full protein option, which will be with a karage, so Japanese fried chicken.
That really sounds good. I love how the food has expanded in the Okanagan, and I think that'll be popular with a lot of people coming up from the coast as well. Our guest is Jamal Christian. He's the restaurant manager at the Hooded Merganser at the Penticton Lakeside Resort and Conference Center. Jamal, let's talk a little bit about the drinks now. Of course, you're in wine country, but we know that people are choosing all different kinds of options to drink, including low alcohol beverages as well. Well, what's the story at your restaurant?
Well, as far as wines go, the Hooded Merganser, for the 20 years we've been open, has, tried to showcase the local wineries we have in the valley, so all the way from Summerlin down to Soyuz. We're working on a new menu that kind of goes back to that roots and shows our support for all the locals and shows off some of the best wines the region has to offer.
So the wine list will continue then?
The wine list will continue. Yeah, we stepped away for a little bit and kind of tried to expand globally, but we've realized we've got so much great wine right here in the valley that it would be a shame not to showcase that on the lake. And especially with a lot of these wineries, if you're sitting on our patio, we can point across the lake and say, oh, there's Poplar Grove, there's Little Engine, and point to the wineries that you're drinking, and you can see them from our patio.
Yeah. Okay. And what about, do you have a happy hour? Will you plan on that, or will it just be the regular offerings? Or
We are playing with an idea of a happy hour and trying to figure out when it makes sense. We're very likely going to be launching one when the patio opens. I can't give you exact hours just yet, as we haven't nailed it down, but you can bet that it'll be during the peak season of sun, during the day, and then a good evening offering as well for those sitting out on the patio and enjoying the views.
Oh, late night. I like that. Yeah, that sounds great. Well, Penticton's also famous. I don't know whether you, I know that you probably pay attention to all the different events that are going on. Is there anything we should know about coming up soon in and around Penticton?
Well, we are actually hosting our very own Bacchanalia event on June 1st.
Oh.
Yeah. Do you know what a Bacchanalia is?
Well, yeah, sort of. It's a bash.
It is definitely a bash.
Are we wearing Roman togas, or what's happening?
I mean, you absolutely can, but it's not required. It's going to stick to the spirit of the original Bacchanalia, focusing on wine and freedom and food and connection. So ours will be June 1st, starting at around 7 p.m. It'll be a bunch of local wineries coming to show off their products, and we're going to be pairing it with great canapes and live cooking done here at the resort. And then we're also offering a package where you can get a good deal on our room if you're coming to the back of the lane and you have tickets for that.
Okay. And how do we get tickets? Is that through the front desk or through the restaurant or online?
Yeah, so you can call the front desk, and they will be able to set you up with tickets, or you can go on the Penticton Lakeside Resort website, and there will be a link there to get tickets for the event. And if you're looking to book that stay-and-play pack, so to speak, just call the front desk, and they'll get you set up.
Yep. That's fantastic. Jamal, great fun to catch up with you today and hear about all the new changes at the restaurant. I know we'll be up there within the next month or two to check it all out and to sit out on that patio. I really do like the idea of sort of a late night happy hour, glass of wine out as the temperature drops a little bit. And, spectacular view, the stars and all the rest of it. It's a great setting. It's a magical place, the Okanagan. Many people, travel to Europe, to wherever, other wine regions. Very few turn out to look like the Okanagan.
No, not at all. There's not a lot of cities or towns that are sandwiched right between two lakes that you can get to within 10 minutes.
Exactly. Jamal, thanks so much for joining us today. Real pleasure to catch up with you.
Thank you. You too.
Our guest with Jamal Christian, restaurant manager of the Hooded McGanser on the lake at the Penticton Lakeside Resort and Conference Center. That's it for this week's show. Special thanks to our technical producer in Vancouver, Mr. Dwayne Bishop, Simon editor Sherry Caleb, and director of operations Stu Ferguson. For all of us at the show, I'm Anthony Gismondi, wishing you a great Easter weekend and an even better glass of wine.
That's it for today's show. This is BC Food and Wine Radio with Anthony Gismondi.